Welcome to Product Brand Management, Chapter 13. In this chapter, we will study types of brands. The objective of this chapter is to understand how brands are classified. So let's get into it and look at some of the types of brands. There are 9 basic classifications of brands, and here they are. So, here's 5 of them: regional brands, attitude brands, e-brands, global brands, in-store brands, premium brands, sub-brands, cult brands, and generic brands. So let's look at what these different types of brands really mean. A regional brand is a brand that is relevant only to a certain region within a country. So for instance, if there is a brand which is prevalent in Tamil Nadu, and it is written in Tamil script, the brand name itself is a Tamil word, it's written in the Tamil script. Of course, it can be transliterated into English as well, but it is only relevant for that region, then it's called a regional brand. On the other hand, an attitude brand. An attitude brand is something that is that gives the consumer a connection with their own self-concept or their own attitude. So for instance, if a consumer is buying a Harley Davidson or a Royal Enfield bike, these bikes also enhance the person's own self-concept. They connect with the self-concept and enhance self-image. I feel like a cooler person if I'm riding a big cruiser bike like a Harley Davidson or a Royal Enfield Bullet. And there are e-brands. These are brands that are purely based on the internet. So for instance, a brand like an Amazon is an e-brand. But there can be overlaps as well. So there are global brands. Amazon is also a global brand. Global brands can be only brick and mortar, just click brands, or click and mortar brands as well. So in case of Amazon, it's a purely click brand, it's a purely e-brand, but it's also global. In case of a Walmart, Walmart is also a global brand, but it's not purely a click brand. Then there are in-store brands. So a lot of big retail outlets, a lot of big retail chains tend to have what they call in-store brands in order to be able to earn a higher margin on their products. I'll give you an example. Shoppers Stop, for instance, has a number of brands available within Shoppers Stop. It's a multi-brand outlet. There are lots of product categories. There are lots of what we call SKUs. They're all present within Shoppers Stop. Once you enter the store, there's perfume brands, there's watch brands, there's the sunglass brands, there's apparel, shoes, luggage, you name it, and they have it. But every single one of these brands has a certain margin, a certain profit margin, which they give to the retail outlet. So for example, if a Ray-Ban is selling sunglasses in a Shoppers Stop outlet, then there will be a certain amount of margin, which will be pretty small, which will be reserved for Shoppers Stop if they manage to sell Ray-Ban through their shop. On the other hand, what happens is a Shoppers Stop will know that all branded goods will have only this bit of a margin. So if they want to make more money, more margin on the products that they sell through their real estate, they want to probably get brands that give them better margins. Now in most branded goods that won't happen. So what they do is they get their own brands produced. So there's a brand called Stop, which is a Shoppers Stop brand. What Shoppers Stop has done is they have outsourced production of a certain category of products, basically apparel and lots of undergarments. They are called Stop. They are branded with the brand Stop, and they are sold in the Shoppers Stop shops. Now in the Shoppers Stop store, if you have a brand called Stop, now this brand will actually give Shoppers Stop a much larger margin because it is their own brand. As a result of this, a lot of large departmental stores, a lot of large retail chains tend to have their own in-store brands. You look at Vijay Sales, they have their own in-store brand called Vise, V-I-S-E. Then Croma has their own in-store brand. Shoppers Stop, like I said, Westside and Lifestyle have their own in-store brands. All these big, even Big Bazaar. Big Bazaar has their own in-store brands. Big Basket, an e-brand, also has their own in-house brands. Now these are called in-store brands. Other types of brands are premium brands, sub-brands, cult brands, and generic brands. Now, premium brands are, as the name suggests, premium. Whatever brand can actually command a price premium from the consumer within the same product category is called a premium brand. Now, these can also be in store with specific to the retail chain, or it can be a regular branded good as well. But if a certain product actually commands a premium over the product category, it's called a premium brand. Now, there are sub-brands, which we discussed in the last session. Then there are cult brands. Again, brands like Harley Davidson, brands like Royal Enfield, brands like Levi's. Over a period of time, they command a certain amount of following of people. A certain number of people start swearing by these brands. The brands become their friends. They humanize the brands. They have relationships with these brands. And such brands actually have cult followings. Such brands are called cult brands. And then there are generic brands. Generic brands basically means that it doesn't really make a difference if the brand is present, if the brand is present on the packet or not. It could be that brand, it could be absolutely any other brand. So for example, if you have stainless steel, if you're buying a stainless steel glass or a stainless steel plate or spoon, you don't really care what brand it is. Some people do, of course, if the design is specific. Otherwise, you'll just go to your neighborhood store, pick up a set of spoons and say, this is fine. Those brands become generic. Let's look at service brands. Service brands are typically intangible and non-physical. They cannot be physically handled. The effects of a service brand can actually be carried, and consumption of services happens during the process of creation. Now, there are more characteristics of service brands that I'll come to, but overall you have to understand that a service brand is like going to a hair cutting salon to get your hair cut. It's intangible, it's non-physical. You cannot actually physically handle the product of hair cutting or a massage. You can't physically handle it. The effects, though, can be carried forward. If I get a haircut, I look in the mirror and I know I've had a haircut. The consumption of the service and the process of creation of the service is simultaneous. As the barber is cutting my hair, immediately, right then, I am actually availing of that service of a haircut. Which is why this last point, consumption of services, actually happens during the process of creation of the service. Service brands are also perishable. They are difficult to be standardized, and equal quality between offerings of services is difficult to assess. Now, service brands are perishable. If I've had a haircut today, that's it. I've had a haircut today. I can't really keep the haircut in my pocket and use it again a week later. No. If the haircut is done today, it's done. It's perishable. It's difficult to standardize because services are provided by individual human beings. So there'll always be a margin for error. There'll always be a margin for a difference. Now, for example, if one barber in a salon is cutting hair in a certain way versus another barber in the same salon is cutting hair, even if they've been given the same training, individual style will always vary, which is why it's very difficult to actually standardize service. What you can standardize is the process of delivering the service. So, for example, in case of a hair cutting salon, you can standardize the fact that the chairs are standard, the cloths that are put on you are standard, the kind of shampoos used are standard, all the products that are used are standard, and there are standard questions asked from consumers. There's a standard process followed. For example, they might show you a mirror to make sure that you understand what your hair looks like. Now, all these things can be standardized. The service delivery process can be standardized. But the actual service standards will always be slightly different from one to another. They will vary from person to person because people are different. Now, equal quality between two offerings of service, that's why, is very difficult to assess. Now, if you have service brands, the next question is, how do you market these services? Marketing of services can be a little bit tricky, because also they're sold keeping in mind the interests of the buyers and the fact that they cannot be really, really standardized. Having said that, the marketing mix of services, just like the marketing mix of anything else, consists of your product, price, place and promotion. In addition to this, you also have people. In addition to this, you also have the factor of ensuring that the standardization happens, ensuring that there's a process. So in addition to product, price, place and promotion, you also have people, you also have processes. The evaluation of services is in terms of search quality, experience quality and credence qualities. So for example, how easy it is to search for a certain service. For example, if you're studying in a certain institute, then that institute is providing a service. That institute is a service provider. How easy is it to search for that service? How easy is it to search for the institute or courses in the institute? What is the experience that you have while studying in an institute? And how much credibility does it really have? Now, these are very, very important factors in being able to evaluate a service and eventually market it. So if you notice, a lot of service marketing, especially institute marketing, revolves around these are my courses, people, there are testimonials of people who've studied here, there are testimonials of teachers who have taught here, and our credibility is the highest in amongst our peer group. Yes, so that is how service marketing is really done. Human resource and service brands, on the other hand, really require appearance, responsiveness, assurance, empathy and reliability to be able to make themselves viable. So in terms of brands that are based on the human resource, the human element, for example, a barbershop or a spa chain, it really revolves around what the appearance of the actual physical outlet is like. What is the responsiveness of people when you're looking to take an appointment or anything similar? What is the assurance that everything will be good with you, everything will be safe, that the service will be provided with good quality, on time? What is the kind of empathy that the individual who's providing the service and the people who you're interacting with during the process of getting the service, how are they? Are they empathetic? And is the service reliable? Can you rely on them to be able to produce a similar standard of service over and over and over again? Like I said, they can't be completely standardized like products can. Services cannot be produced on an assembly line. Having said that, reliability still becomes important because some level of standardization can happen. So let's summarize this session. The types of brands we studied were regional, attitude, e-brands, global brands, in-store brands, premium brands, sub-brands, cult brands, and generic brands. We looked at differences between goods and service marketing. Goods, of course, are tangible. They can be transferred from one person to another. Services, on the other hand, are intangible. They are non-physical, and you can't really transfer them from one person to another. If I have got a haircut, I can't really give that haircut to somebody else. I have consumed it immediately as the services disseminated. I have consumed the service. Goods can be physically handled in stored, and services cannot be physically handled. Their effects can be carried. Consumption of services happens during the process of creation. Now, goods are generally non-perishable. Of course, FMCG goods, perishable goods are perishable. But in general, you take a good and it at least lasts for some time. But a service, on the other hand, because it's consumed as it's created, it's completely perishable. Goods can be standardized, services are difficult to standardize. Although, like I said, you can standardize the process of service delivery, but you can't actually promise that this service will be given in this way every single time. Equal quality of goods can be ensured. Equal quality of between two different offering of services is very difficult to assess. So that's about this chapter. Thank you.